Welcome to the Court of Appeals. Looks like we have two counsels, so we must have our quota for this first case. I'll have the marshal introduce the panel, please.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Sleater, Judge Riley, Judge Rodenberg, the Honorable Randall J. Sleater presiding.
And good morning once again. And we are proceeding remotely, obviously, today. But all the rules, of course, remain the same. You'll see the clock in the corner. If for some reason, or you can let us know if you don't see the clock, but hopefully you do see it in one corner. If at any time we lose you, the marshal knows to stop until we're reconnected. We are recording these proceedings, as you saw the little pop-up message, so any separate recording is prohibited, but the recording will be available on the Judicial Branch's website within 24 hours. And so our first case is file A211009 in the matter of, A210847 in the matter of the appeal of the redetermination of benefits, Judicial Ditch 37 by V&J Farms, who is the appellant. And counsel, we do ask that when you begin your comments, you do identify yourself for the record. And so counsel for appellant, you may begin.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Ryan Somatic, and I'm the attorney for the appellant V&J Farms in this matter. I'm asking that this court reverse the district court's decision and remand back to the district court for a trial on the merits. Now, as the court is likely aware, my client V&J owns a farm, and there's a ditch that runs through this farm, and the ditch has been there for 100 years or so. And so the existence of the ditch is not an issue, but what the watershed district did here was what's called a redetermination action, where the redetermination of benefits and damages caused by the ditch is, say, updated to reflect modern benefits and damages. My client appealed that redetermination to the district court. Now, all of this is done under a specific statutory scheme, which is Chapter 103E, that governs all drainage actions. And there's also a specific statute here, 103E.091, that governs the appellate procedures for effecting that appeal in the district court. And this case is all about interpretation of that particular statute. Now, I think it's important to note right out of the gate that where a statute is unambiguous, the court just applies its plain terms. And the district here has actually never argued that the statute is ambiguous. If that's the case, well, then my client has to prevail because my client has explicitly complied with the plain language of both components of the appellate effectuation statute. Now, those two components, as the court likely knows, one requires filing a notice of appeal with the county auditor within 30 days of the order appealed from. My client did that. The second component requires serving notice of the appeal on other landowners that may be affected by this appeal and the auditor. Well,
Mr. Somatic, I'm going to ask both of you this question. I think you both agree that there isn't any case law that's right on point interpreting this current statute. And so two questions. Should we make it precedential? If so, what would the syllabus point be? And then I was really struck by subdivision 2, where it says must be served to. I've never heard of a being served to. I've heard being served on. What do you think that means?
Well, let me go to your first point about precedent. I think it should be precedential because quite simply for the fact that no other case exists. And do we want this issue to come up before the Court of Appeals again and again? No. Do we want district courts to know how to deal with this? Yes. Do we want litigants to know what their expectations are to effectuate this type of appeal? Yes. And without the guidance that only the court can give, this is just going to keep happening again and again. So I think that this is an obvious case for making this precedent. And as to the syllabus point, I think you could say when an appellant seeks, or when a party seeks to appeal from a drainage redetermination of benefits order to invoke the district court's jurisdiction, an appellant must only file a notice of appeal within 30 days of the order appealed from. As to the rest of it, other affected landowners can be brought in if they are necessary parties once the district court's jurisdiction has been properly invoked. And regarding the—
Mr. Somatic, before you move on, a question. It sounds like you do agree that the statute has the two parts. So we have the subdivision 2A and B, because part of your brief seemed to suggest if you only satisfy the B, we're done. So I'm taking from that you agree that both of those need to be separately complied with. And my question for you is, assuming the first one is without, which it does, it doesn't have a timeline, it does suggest then service, however method that is, could occur beyond the 30 days. And respondent makes a good point. That seems a little bit quirky because the auditor should have already filed the case with the district court per the 30-day requirement. And as your client did here, he personally served the auditor. Now, I realize there was an earlier non-personal service, and that's one of the issues. But so would you agree then that the statute allows for a completion of service after it's been filed with the district court per the auditor?
I do agree with that. And, you know, I think an important parallel to that, or a notable parallel, is the Schultz case, which was an appeal from a land use decision to a district court. And in that case, the Supreme Court said, well, as long as you perfect the appeal such that the district court has guidance, other parties can be served after the fact and be brought into the action, even if they're parties necessary to the action. So, I mean, that is one way to read this statute to give import to all its provisions. The district court's subject matter jurisdiction is invoked by the filing. Now, that's the important part. As to whether other landowners need to be brought into this, they can be served after the fact.
Well, when I had ditch cases, I often used to consult with the Minnesota Public Drainage Manual. And that manual says that the notice of the appeal must be served to the county auditor. That's the other part of Judge Riley's question. To the county auditor within 30 days after the order to be appealed is filed. What ought we to make of that guidance from that manual?
Candidly, Your Honor, I'm not familiar with that manual, but I would suspect it's not a statute and not written by the legislature.
Yeah, it's written by a group. And I also note that the citation it gives is only to the statute, not to any case law, which goes to the publication issue, I suppose. But that is something that practitioners and county auditors rely on, in my experience.
That may be so, but the legislature didn't write that. And the only thing that we're trying to do here is either apply the plain language of the legislature, or if that is somehow ambiguous, divine the intent of the legislature. And frankly, somebody else's commentary about it, whether it's relied on or not, is not the court's goals here as far as applying statutes or interpreting them. So, I mean, there are several rules on that point of statutory construction that I think are important to consider here. That are established rules of statutory construction that don't involve, say, bringing in a non-party group or even the executive's interpretation of a statute. For example, a court can't write words into a statute that just aren't there. And the district court's decision does that multiple times. It writes a 30-day deadline into subsection A, and it writes the word personal into subsection A, and it can't do either of those things. Another rule of statutory construction applicable is that where the legislature writes an item in one section of a chapter and omits it from another, it shows that its intent as between those two sections is different. And in chapter 103E, there are several sections where the legislature wrote personal service or service like a summons, and it just didn't write it in this statute.
Mr. Semantic, yes. Both the district court and Mr. Kolb, his client in their brief, respondent's brief, focused on the Skyline case. What key reason, factual or perhaps otherwise, that would you suggest to us Skyline does not direct our decision?
Sure. I mean, there's two parts here. So in Skyline, the statute that the court was dealing with, it said that the parties had an appellate right, but it did not say how to perfect that right in the district court. And therefore, when the courts were interpreting that statute, they had to come up with some method to define the procedural scope of affecting that right. But they didn't have to write any language into the statute. It was just completely absent. So under those circumstances, it is completely sensible for an appellate court to say, hey, well, the legislature didn't specify how this right is perfected. Therefore, we'll go to the standard methods of perfection that are specified in the Minnesota Rules of Civil Procedure. But what that case also recognizes is that where the legislature does speak to the procedure to perfect an appeal, that procedure controls. And I mean, that's true no matter what, but that's certainly true in a case such as this one, where the rules of civil procedure come out and explicitly exempt this type of procedure from the civil rules. So you have the rules themselves exempting this type of procedure, and then you have the statute in question specifying a specific procedure for affecting the right. And neither of those circumstances was present in the Skyline case. So honestly, the Skyline case offers this court no guidance at all. And the same is true if you look at the Schultz case there. It's another an appellate right where the court had to determine, well, there's a right, but there's no procedure specified. How are we going to handle this? That's just not the case here. You know,
Mr. Semantic, yes. Subdivision 103E095, I believe it's subdivision 5, says that a party aggrieved by a final order or judgment rendered on appeal to the district court may appeal as in other civil cases, and that appeal must be perfected within 30 days. So based on your comment to me just now, how would, let's say you're representing a client, your client perfects service under that subdivision?
Well, so the appeal is taken as it is another civil appeal. So if I was going to appeal from a district court decision under this statute, I would say, well, how are appeals perfected in other civil cases? And I would look to the rules of civil appellate procedure. So there it's deferring to the civil appellate rules, although even there it's modifying slightly the rule by saying that the appeal must be perfected within 30 days instead of the standard 60. So as far as the methods for perfecting that appeal, I go to the civil rules, the civil appellate rules rather. And as to the time frame, I look at the statute itself. So the legislature can involve itself as much as it likes in procedures to specify methods of service, to specify methods of perfecting appeal, to alter timelines. And in this case, it has done so by having a specific statute that's inconsistent with the normal rules of civil procedure. I would just like to point out regarding the rules of statutory construction that the district has not put forth any reasonable reading of the statute that follows the rules of statutory construction. In fact, it violates them, as I've pointed out multiple times.
So Mr. Semeta, getting back to one of my earlier questions, do you think that served to is the same as served on?
You know, I can't take a position on that, frankly, Your Honor, because I am of the same mind of you that I have never read the language serve to. I have only read serve on. But I'm not sure because of the ambiguity of the serve to where it's not used in other places in the law. I'm not sure that offers much guidance as to the interpretation of the previous portions of that statute. If serve to was some kind of widely applied and understood term, perhaps it would, but it's just not.
So what do you think it means? Sorry.
What do I think it means? I'm sorry, you're looking at subdivision 4, is that right? Your question was a bit ago, I apologize. I forget exactly where you were, which provision you were asking me about.
No, I'm talking about subdivision 2. It's used a couple of times there.
Okay.
2A uses the term served to.
I think that, again, that's actually similar language. Served to. I'm not sure exactly what the legislature was contemplating there, but I think read in conjunction with the other portions, I think it could be either served to, meaning filed with, or served to being a type of mail service. Unfortunately, the legislature wasn't explicit with that particular serve to language.
On the subject of whether it means filed with, subdivision 2B actually talks about filed. So it has to be something different than filed, it seems to me. Otherwise, it has no meaning at all.
I suppose it must be, although if you file something with the auditor, on the other hand, then why do you have to serve it to him too? Because it's the same action twice.
Well, but of course, when we determine what the statute means, we can't disregard language, right? We have to presume that it means something.
To the effect possible.
And even though the something may be not, doesn't make much sense to us, but that's really never the question before us, whether we would have enacted the statute that way.
Sure, but it can't be an absurd interpretation either. I'll know my time is up, so I will stop there.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Smadding. You will have 5 minutes of rebuttal and counsel for responding. May I identify yourself and proceed? Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is John Kolb, and I am appearing on behalf of the North Fork Crow River Watershed District, which is the drainage authority for Ditch 37. Judge Riley, if I could just go to your questions right up front, since you asked them and you said you were going to ask me as well, so I'll just address them up front. I think the syllabus item here is the timing and method of perfecting a drainage appeal. And the word served, in my opinion, means served. And whether it's served upon, served on, served to, served means served. And that process has been recognized by this court in drainage appeals. And I believe that Mr. Somatic would have to agree that there is some service requirement because his client did in fact, or he on behalf of his client, did in fact eventually, though several months later after the filing, did in fact serve the county auditor. So he must believe that served to means served upon or served on, however you want to do that. And so I can only attribute the phrase served to versus served on as sloppy drafting or otherwise, but served is a term of art. And it goes to the issue then of, is a drainage appeal a new civil action? And I believe that this court in the Giesecke case, although it is unpublished, recognized that a drainage appeal is a civil action. And in order to initiate a civil action, service of process under Rule 4 is required.
Well, so, didn't in the Giesecke case, though, wasn't that conceded by the appellant that and not decided by the court?
Well, it was conceded by the appellant, but Your Honor had the... had the issue been, you know, the issue there was it was party service that occurred. And so the court dismissed because party service is not allowed. But that's a recognition that service is otherwise required, because if service wasn't required, it wouldn't have mattered if it was party service or party filing.
But I was on that panel and it wasn't even an issue because all the parties, it wasn't even a concession. It was just everyone agreed that Rule 4 or Rule 5 applied, well, which isn't the case here.
Well, all right. Then we go to the issue of how do you invoke the authority of the district court? And the way that we invoke the authority of district court from a quasi-judicial proceeding from a different entity, in this case, a drainage authority, in the Skyline case, a zoning authority, is by service of process under Rule 4. And in fact, the drainage appeal is the first time in a drainage proceeding that the authority of the district court is invoked.
But Mr. Cole, but just on that point, isn't 2B indicate how the district court obtained subject matter jurisdiction? Once the notice, which was served here within 30 days to the auditor then files it with the district court. Now the district court has a file. And so we now have subject matter jurisdiction by that 2B with the district court. Am I correct in that regard?
Your Honor, I disagree. I think that is simply the filing. How does it get into the hands of the clerk of court? There are several instances where lawsuits are served upon parties in order to establish that personal jurisdiction and then ultimately filed with the district court to move forward. So this is one of those cases where the statute says two things. It says it must be served and it must be filed. And the question then becomes, when does the service have to occur? Mr. Somatic seems to agree that service is required, but he says he would argue that it's an unlimited timeline, that there is no time within which that service has to occur. And if it is—
Mr. Cole, but I don't see a timeline in 2A, so wouldn't that be, at that point, true? There's nothing in 2A where the word serve is used that has a timeline. And my second question is, if let's assume that Somatic's client had served the chairman of the county board, which is allowed under Rule 403, would your client be able to bring a motion for lack of personal jurisdiction?
I believe yes, and I believe this court has addressed that issue as well in an instance where the auditor was not served. And that would be in the Zimmerman case, although there was some other issues in that case that caused a remand to the district court, but the fundamental principle that the auditor has to be served was acknowledged and recognized by the Court of Appeals. They remanded it for other reasons, and we don't have those reasons here.
Doesn't that suggest then that in and of itself be inconsistent with the rules of civil procedure, hence Rule 81 would control, which means we have to discern the language of the statute and not our civil rules for proper service?
Well, I don't agree that it's inconsistent because we're trying to harmonize an entire statute here and we've got two things at issue. We've got the drainage code and we've got two appeal provisions, 091 and 095. And as you pointed out, Your Honor, the appeal of an establishment order, for example, under 095 very clearly says it has to be done within the 30 days. Why would the legislature have included two different methods of perfecting an appeal from a drainage proceeding? You would think that they would have wanted them to be consistent, and that's how they've been treated. And I believe that's why it is written the way it is in the drainage manual, is because that drainage manual was written by agency individuals and practitioners. This, in 20 plus years of practicing in drainage law, we've never encountered this argument that somehow you do not have to serve to initiate the civil action of an appeal of a drainage proceeding, and that you don't have to do it within the 30 days. This is
Mr. Kolb, can I?
And it is a first impression. Sorry, Your Honor, go ahead.
No, it's all right. Isn't the why the point Judge Rodenberg had made earlier? Is it really our bailiwick, should I say, to ask why? Just ask what it is. So the point is those two subdivisions are different, and we do presume that means the legislature knows the difference, but for whatever reason, the one we're considering today does not have either that timeline or that language about other civil proceedings.
Well, Your Honor, it does have a timeline, and it's the 30 days, and it does have,
Well, subdivision 2B, but there's no timeline in 2A is on my own question that I was asking earlier. What you're Wouldn't it be true we'd be adding a 30 days under 2A that clearly is omitted?
I don't believe that. Well, I would not parse subdivision 2 as closely as you are between subdivision A and subdivision B. Subdivision A talks about the right to appeal and how you initiate that appeal. Number B talks about how you perfect that appeal. And so you've got two different but related concepts in subdivision 2. And we have to first decide, is the appeal the initiation of a civil action? If it's an initiation of a civil action, Rule 4 applies. Rule 4 requires service. Then the question becomes, when does that service have to occur? Mr. Simetic is not arguing that service doesn't have to occur. He's just saying that it can occur at any time. And if it can occur at any time, then what is there a limitation of action in the drainage code for initiating the appeal? And it would seem to be the 30 days. And while the filing with the auditor might be a requirement, it's also a service requirement. And those two things end up being the same. I can't explain why the legislature wrote it the way they did, but in practice, it would seem absurd that you have a filing requirement, a filing then with the district court, but no service until you decide to do it. And in the Giesecke case, for example, Giesecke could have turned around because apparently the appeal had been filed. Giesecke could have turned around and then done a third party service upon the auditor and would have resurrected its appeal after this court dismissed it. So we have to not only be consistent in the interpretation of the statute, but we should be consistent in the application of prior case law by this court.
Do you agree with opposing counsel that the statute, and I'm talking about subdivision 2 now, is unambiguous?
I do not believe the statute is ambiguous at all, Your Honor, and I believe it clearly says that you have to serve and file. And the only question is, when does that service have to occur? And if this is an initiation of a civil case, the court cannot gain jurisdiction until service under Rule 4 occurs. And that didn't occur here within the 30 days. It occurred some months after the notice of appeal was filed with the county auditor, and the county auditor did in fact turn around and file that with the district court, albeit under protest because we did not feel that the court had jurisdiction because no service had occurred. I just will state also, Mr. Simetic in his brief talked a lot about the application of the Skyline case. Again, we only cite the Skyline case for the notion that when you have a quasi-judicial tribunal that's not judicial, the appeal from that is a new civil action and it requires service under Rule 4. This is unlike a condemnation case. He references that in the fact that when you appeal from a commissioner's award in a condemnation case, that is already in the district court because the condemnation itself is initiated by service and filing with the district court. The district court appoints those commissioners, and then the appeal is just a continuation of that initial civil action. And to bookend that, I would direct the court to the Housing Redevelopment Authority of the City of Richfield versus Edelman, which is 590 Northwest 2nd, 327, and specifically the concurrence of Justice Anderson talking about the fact that a condemnation case is initiated by service and by filing with the district court, and that the appeal is just a continuation of that existing civil action. I have nothing further to argue, Your Honor. I think the district court got it right. I believe that there is a 30-day requirement to perfect the appeal, and I believe that service and served to in the statute means service as in civil service under Rule 4, and that an appeal is a new civil action that requires service under the rules of civil procedure in order to vest jurisdiction with the district court.
What are we to make of the inclusion of the drainage law in the list of special proceedings under Rule 81.01 of the civil rules. Does that have any bearing here?
It does, in that if the drainage code were inconsistent with the civil rules, or the civil rules process was inconsistent with the drainage code, then I believe that the Rule 81 special proceedings would apply. But here there's nothing inconsistent. The statute says serve. It's a new civil action. Civil, you know, that requires service under Rule 4. So I believe that the civil rules apply. There is no specific guidance as to how to perfect an appeal of a drainage matter other than 103E091 and 103095, and both contemplate service upon the auditor as the means of initiating that civil action.
Which, of course, brings us back to the question of whether Subdivision 2A requires personal service or some other sort of service.
Well, and Your Honor, if it is the initiation of a civil action, then Rule 4 applies. Personal service is required, and if personal service is not followed, then you have to have the alternative, which would be a mailed service with the proper notice and waiver using Form 22B, which didn't occur in this case either.
Very well. I don't see any other questions, so unless you had anything final, Mr. Kolb.
I do not, Your Honor. Thank you. Thanks to the court.
You're welcome. And Mr. Smedic, you'll now have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So as soon as you see it in the corner, there it is. You may proceed. There you go.
Just a factual clarification right out of the gate. We're not agreeing that personal service is necessarily required. We only did that after the district protested. And it's sort of the same thing. The district must agree that we did everything right because they filed it with the district court. Obviously, they don't. It's the same situation with us doing the personal service after the fact. Regarding the new civil action matter, that is not a touchstone as to whether service is required under Rule 4 or Rule 5, because when it comes to invoking the jurisdiction of the district court for an appeal, the legislature can set forth any type of perfection process that it wants. So merely because a matter is a new civil action, the legislature can say, well, you can start a new civil action by mailing, you can do it by filing, you can do it by whatever service the legislature said. So the fact that it's a new civil action doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Mr. Semantic, what's your most strong, or what you would consider your strongest argument to us then, that serve to the auditor means by the legislature something other than personal service?
That's part of it. I mean, yes, it can be something other than personal service, and it's also not limited by the 30-day deadline. So there's no dispute. My client did personally serve the auditor, just not within the 30-day window. And if you look at the Schultz case, I mean, that's exactly the sort of situation where you could serve people after the case has already been initiated and the subject matter of the district court has already been effectuated. And I just want to point out too, that the due process concerns of personal service here just they don't mean anything. They're not here for the county auditor, because who invokes the district court's jurisdiction? The auditor does. So there's just never going to be a situation where the auditor doesn't know that the jurisdiction of the district court is being invoked, because the auditor is the one to actually invoke it. So the kind of personal service protection that you might see in a case like Skyline, where anybody can be the appellant, that's not present here.
Doesn't that interpretation sort of just ignore 2A altogether? If that's true, then there's really nothing left of 2A. You file it with the auditor, the auditor has notice, the auditor files it with the district court has jurisdiction. I mean, then what does subdivision 2A mean, or nothing at all?
Well, it means that you can bring in other interested parties after the subject matter jurisdiction of the district court has been invoked.
True, but as to the mention of the auditor, if we adopt that interpretation, it seems like the reference to the auditor in 2A means nothing at all.
Well, it doesn't have to mean nothing at all. You could, after effectuating, after the auditor files in the district court and you get your notice of case assignment or notice of judicial assignment from the district court as a party, you can then go ahead and serve notice of the appeal, which is the language the statute uses in subdivision A. It does not say notice. So the filing says file a notice of appeal. The service says provide service of notice of the appeal. So you could serve the auditor after you get a case number and a judge assigned in that time frame. So it doesn't have to mean nothing. It certainly means more as per the landowners, but it doesn't have to mean nothing for the auditor.
But then you would be serving a person who already has the notice because that auditor has filed the notice with the district court.
That's true. But as I said in my previous argument, if I'm filing with somebody who has already been served, that's sort of the other side of the same coin. It could be potentially duplicated either way that you read the statute.
So, Mr. Somatic, to follow up on that, just to clarify, if your position is that the legislature allows for mailed service, then are you indicating the same document, the same letter, the same will be both serving to the auditor, but also giving notice to the auditor, assuming it has the other explanation that 2B requires about the basis, but it would be all one document serving the two purposes of 2A and B?
Yeah, and I don't think that's pure surplusage, as it will. It's actually a way to read the statute harmoniously. Now, you might have to separately take that document and give it to other affected landowners, but at least then you can read A and B together as a harmonious statute. Just one last comment before we read out here. Inertia, or the way we have always done it, that's not a rule of statutory construction. So simply because people have done things for a certain way, that's not something the court looks to interpret a statute.
Very well. Thank you to both the counsel. We appreciate your briefing and your comments today on this interesting ditch related issue, and we will be issuing a ruling in a statutory timeline. We will proceed to our second case now. So each of you have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Your Honor.